Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 203 in the series. It's August 5th. And to my right, the very dimply Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
Lisa Wolf is here.
It's Saturday night.
She's not on vacation.
Are you kidding?
She's here.
Well, that would be fun, but it's fun to be here, too.
Lollapalooza's out there. Look
yes.
at that. Oh, my gosh. Look at all the people
Crowds.
Walking by on Michigan Avenue here. Shante Garth, our producer in the booth, best in the business. And we have three classic radio shows, Lisa. We're going to play classic radio all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. What do you think of that?
We have three great classic radio
shows. We really do. We're going to start things off with a very suspenseful, mysterious Traveler episode from 1950. Then your favorite, one of your favorite comedies.
Yep.
The Charlie McCarthy Show, because you like
it.
Ventriloquism.
I
I'm
sure
not
do.
Sure why.
Even on the radio, it's even
Maybe
better that way.
Maybe that's why we get along, because I'm your dummy.
No.
I don't have my ba-dum-bum.
I don't think so.
And then Under Arrest, a good detective drama, and it's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV show Sharp Objects, about a reporter who was recently discharged from a psych hospital while trying to solve the murder of two young girls.
Mm, okay.
Mm, interesting combination
yeah,
there.
I like this actress a lot.
I know you do.
Yeah.
And the winner is going to get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for
$25. The number to call, 312-981-7200. You can win a Lou Malnati's pizza. All right, here's a hint. This actress played Charlene Fleming in 2010's The Fighter.
Mickey's a grown man. He can think for himself.
All right. She's in a lot of stuff.
Yes, she is.
Tons and tons of stuff. Do you know who that actress is? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
Mickey's a grown man. He can think for himself.
Let's talk to Jim. He's on the line. Hey, Jim.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Good to hear from you. Who is that actress Carl's
I
oogling
think
over?
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams is exactly right. Jim, you are a winner. You have won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. That is
terrific.
Yeah, isn't that great? That is my very favorite pizza. Yours too, right, Carl?
Love it.
We love it. So Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com, and you are welcome to share it with your favorite WGN radio theater hosts if you want to, but you don't have to. Well, thanks a lot for calling and take care.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Jim. All right. Jim's a big winner. He won a pizza, and I think he's going to invite us over to have some of that.
Yeah, or he can come over here. You know, we're not picky.
If he orders spinach, I'll have a piece for sure.
If it's all veggie, I'm in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm out.
You're not a meat eater, Lisa,
no,
are
you? No, sorry.
No, she doesn't. You don't like you don't like sausage or pepperoni or anything.
I am a vegetarian.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. It's all good.
You're a lot of things.
Yes, that's true. Most of them are good.
And you're a lover of classic radio.
Well, I have learned to become
from you. It's like beer or wine. It's you have to acquire a taste for it.
I don't drink beer or wine, but I do love classic radio. So you're close.
You know what, Lisa? Before we listen to The Mysterious Traveler, I do want to remind our listeners that we have a text in line, and we love getting your texts throughout the show. That number is 312-981-7200. Any questions about the show, or if you want to request a certain program to play, or whatever. You want to ask Lisa a question, just text us, right, Lisa?
Yeah, there were quite a few people who texted at Amy Adams. They knew the answer. So yeah. It's just nice to know there's people out there, and we love to talk to you back and forth. We also have a Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater, and we check it throughout the night, and we have posts throughout the night of pictures of the stars who perform in all of these three radio shows of the evening and some goodies throughout the night. We like to have fun, so make sure to check out our Facebook page as well.
Yeah, and then, in fact, the first picture we're putting up is of Maurice Tarplin, because he was the mysterious traveler. And that's where we're going to start things off with. The Mysterious Traveler was a mystery series that came to radio in 1943. And the creators of the show were Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan. It ran on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And Maurice Tarplin, he played a man on a train who would just look at people on the train and kind of know what was going on in their minds. And he would ask you to join him on another journey into the strange and terrifying. New York's best supporting actors like Jackson Beck and Lawson Zerbe, Elspeth Eric, Louis Van Ruten, Mason Adams, they all starred in these shows. And it was mostly sustained. It didn't have a sponsor. I'm not sure why, because it was a really good series. It did not make a transition to television, although I think this could work on TV even now, Lisa. So if you want to call Steven Spielberg and see if he wants to do a creepy show. There was a comic book series and a magazine series, and it was also penned by the same guys who wrote The Sealed Book and The Strange Dr. Weird. Very similar series, but I think you will love this. This is called The Man from Singapore. It's from April 4th, 1950, and it stars Maurice Tarplin. Here's part one of The Mysterious Traveler.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Copeland. And starring tonight, three of radio's foremost personalities, Grace Coffin, John Gibson, and Louis Van Ruten, in The Man from Singapore.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we follow the machinations of a ruthless woman. It's a story I call The Man from Singapore. My story begins in the San Francisco offices of the John Bates Importing Company. In a large, well-furnished office, Horace Riker, a junior partner in the firm, sits behind his desk, staring unbelievably at a letter which he holds in trembling hands. He reads the letter a second time, then agitatedly turns to the intercom box on his desk.
Blanche, come in my office at once, please.
Be right there.
Oh, Lord. What can we say to him? What can we say?
What is it, Horace? What's wrong?
Come in. Close the door.
Well, what is it?
Blanche, this airmail letter I just received. He's coming back.
Who is? You mean Bates?
Yes, John Bates, our senior partner. After 25 years in the Far East, he's coming back.
Flying?
Yes, he's leaving Singapore this Thursday. He'll be here a week from today.
Leaving Singapore Thursday?
Yes. Blanche, how can you stand there so calmly? Do you realize what John Bates will do when he finds out? $100,000. That's how much I'm short.
Horace, get hold of yourself.
I took the money for you. You've got to help me. Bates will send me to prison if you don't, and they'll make you give everything back.
They'll never get anything back. Never. The house, the car, the money. I'm keeping it.
You've never met Bates. He's a vindictive man. He'll send me to prison, and you too, if he can.
Oh, no, he won't. He isn't sending anyone to prison.
He isn't? What'll stop him?
I always knew that someday he'd return to this country. That this moment would come. And now it has.
Yes. Now it has.
I've had a long time to think it over. And there's only one thing we can do.
What's that?
John Bates is never going to reach San Francisco.
What?
He's going to vanish in Hawaii.
Vanish in Hawaii? What are you talking about?
He's leaving Singapore Thursday. He'll be in Hawaii Saturday evening, and we'll stop there overnight. You and I will be in Hawaii when he gets there.
What for?
I've told you. He's going to remain there. He's never going to reach San Francisco.
Blanche, you mean... No. Oh, no. I'll have no part of it.
Would you rather go to prison for 15 years?
But murder.
Yes, murder. We're living in a jungle where we have to kill or be killed. The sooner you get used to the idea, the better.
I stole, Blanche, but I won't commit murder. I can't.
You can, and we will. We're in this thing together to the end.
But, Blanche, I...
There are no buts. Now, you'll do exactly as I say. Just think, Horace. Once Bates is gone, this company will be really ours. He hasn't any relatives. There's no one who will come forward to make trouble.
It's wrong. It's wrong.
It isn't wrong. It's only wrong if we fail. And we aren't going to. Now, you and I are flying to Hawaii on Friday under assumed names. And we're going on different flights. I want you to shave off your mustache, dye your hair, get yourself a pair of heavy black rimmed glasses.
Yes, Blanche. I guess it's the only way.
I'll dress as a widow. Wear a black veil.
Well, won't people wonder where we are while we're gone?
We'll tell them we're driving up to my mountain lodge for the weekend. There's no phone there. It's completely isolated. We'll fly to Hawaii Friday morning and be back in the office Monday afternoon.
You've had this planned for a long time, haven't you?
Yes. You should know by now, Horace, that I won't let anything or anyone stand in my way.
I've loved you so blindly, Blanche, that I suppose I've never realized how ruthless you can be.
And it's my ruthlessness that will save us. Now, here's the rest of my plan. You'll take the flight that leaves at dawn Friday. Now, when you arrive at Honolulu in the afternoon, you're to go to the Dorset Hotel. When you arrive, hire a car. There's the Singapore Clipper now, taxiing up to the gate. Bates will be getting out in a minute.
Blanche, it's still not too late to change our minds, even if
we've come to Hawaii for one thing, Horace, and we're going through with it. There's no turning back for either of us.
Yes, but there are so many things that can go wrong. What if Bates doesn't...
Nothing will go wrong if you do exactly as I told you. Look, the passengers are leaving the plane now. Point out Bates to me.
What with the darkness and the distance, it's hard to tell one passenger from another. There he is.
That tall, heavy man speaking to the stewardess?
Yes. Yes, that's Bates.
All right. You stay here in the car and wait.
Yes, Blanche.
Pardon me. Mr. Bates?
Why, yes?
I wonder if I might have a word with you outside.
Who are you? We've never met, have we?
No, we haven't. My name is Vera Charles. I flew here to Hawaii with your partner, Horace Riker.
Horace is here in Hawaii?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he's waiting in a car park just up the avenue. If we can step outside.
Very well. What's Horace doing here in Honolulu?
Perhaps it would be better if Horace told you. It isn't a very pleasant story.
Just who are you, Miss Charles?
I'm Horace's fiancé.
Oh, I see. I suppose I should offer my congratulations, but at this point, there are a great many things that need clearing up.
Horace will explain, Mr. Bates.
Where's the car?
Right up ahead, that black one.
Oh.
There's Horace in the back of the car.
Yes, I see.
Hello, John.
Horace, Now, what's all this about?
It's quite an involved story, John. Will you get in the car?
Thank you.
Oh, I think you'll be more comfortable in the front, Mr. Bates. The suitcases in the back will be in your way.
Very well. Now get to it. What's happened?
You remember when I was in Singapore last year, I told you about the office manager I'd hired, Blanche Werby.
Yes, yes. You said she was a very efficient woman. What about her?
Well, she's absconded.
Absconded?
Yes, with $40,000 of the firm's money.
What?
Yes, Mr. Bates. She took the money Wednesday. Through sheer accident, Horace learned that she had flown to Hawaii under an assumed name.
My word.
Horace decided not to waste a moment.
Yes?
Horace decided not to waste a moment, but to take action.
What action? Really, Miss Charles?
I thought you were never going to hit him. Now, let's get going.
Did I kill him?
No. He's only unconscious. But so far, so good. I doubt if anyone even saw him leave the air terminal.
How far is it to the spot you picked?
It's 30 miles out. They'll never find him, believe me.
Blanche, I won't do it. I can't.
I didn't expect you to. I'll do it. We'll bury him out there, and 4 hours from now, we'll be on a plane going back to San Francisco.
Yes, Blanche, there's no question in your mind as to what has to be done, is there? John Bates dies just as you planned and is buried in a lonely grave on a Hawaiian mountainside after all identification has been removed. Then you and Horace drive back to the airport. He returns the rented car, and as two utter strangers, you board a plane for San Francisco. You sit far apart, never even looking at each other. 8 hours later, you land in California. Disguises are abandoned at your apartment, and the two of you go to the office, acting as if you've just returned from the mountains. As you enter Horace's office, he sinks despondently onto the couch.
Get hold of yourself, Horace. It's all over. I admit it was quite a strain, but it's all over now.
But the police...
What about them? Bates' plane is due to land this afternoon at 4:00. When he doesn't turn up here at the office, we'll start making inquiries. In the end, we'll turn to the police. They'll establish that he reached Hawaii and disappeared. We have nothing to worry about.
You're sure, Blanche? You're sure?
Of course I am. With Bates dead, we don't have to worry about the books. They're in perfect order. And in time, we'll own the company outright. Yes, it's going to be nice. We haven't a thing to worry about. Not a thing.
Not one thing to worry about, Lisa.
Nothing.
The Mysterious Traveler. We're listening to The Man from Singapore from 1950. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes, but first, these words. All right, this is WGN Radio, and this is the WGN Radio Theater. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf, and we are here every Saturday and Sunday night bringing you the best in classic radio, all your favorites like The Shadow and Suspense, Inner Sanctum, The Great Gildersleeve, Fibber McGee and Molly, and Charlie McCarthy. You like Charlie McCarthy, right, Lisa?
Of course I do. And, you know, I just want to mention, this is show 203. All right. We just got a text, and it's so nice that people who have been with us for so long and started with us from day one, or even from show 100, we just so appreciate our loyal listeners. And
oh,
I just
yeah.
wanted to mention
it's all
that.
About the listeners. We want to please yeah. you. We want to play what you want to hear. So that's why we give you a text in line, 312-981-7200. It's like request radio, you know, when you'd, hey, play that song, play Sugar Sugar or whatever, you know. We do that with classic radio shows. Somebody earlier texted, said, we want to hear Johnny Dollar, yours truly, Johnny
yeah,
Dollar. So we'll get one on the air for you. But tonight we're tuning in to The Mysterious Traveler. After that, it's the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy show. There's a fantastic exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. I think they were donated to the museum. The original Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snerd dolls are over there, along with it's just a wonderful exhibit. And then a little later, Under Arrest, good sort of police drama. And then tomorrow we'll be back with more classic radio. We're here from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. We do a different show on Saturdays as Sundays. So you get 6 hours of us and 6 classic radio shows. So make sure you mark it on your calendar, tell a friend. We love doing this, and we're happy to be here every Saturday and Sunday.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, if you're a Facebook user, just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. Check our Facebook page out. And Lisa's posted a wonderful picture of Maurice Tarplin, who plays the Mysterious Traveler, on this radio show we're listening to. So make sure you check that out. There'll be a great picture of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy up a little later. And then a picture of Joe DeSantis starring in Under Arrest. We like to post pictures because it's always fun to see what these people look like in reality, right? You have your mind's eye, theater of the mind of what they look like, right, Lisa?
Yeah, it's always different.
I look a lot like George Clooney.
Right, and nobody would know that.
Yeah.
I mean, just from your voice.
I'm projecting that out to people. So when you're thinking of what I look like, it's George Clooney.
Well, you know what we're
going to do? Mixed with Channing Tatum.
I was going to say that.
You were going to say Channing Tatum?
Channing Tatum. It doesn't get any better.
And then a mix of...
That's enough right there.
Probably...
Don't add anything good right there.
That works, right?
It's a good combo.
Two.
And you know what I will do?
Chris Hemsworth? What about that?
Let's just...
The height of Chris Hemsworth.
Well, you keep dreaming. Maybe we'll take a little Facebook live video behind the scenes. And
Lisa
they can
looks a lot like
you.
Penelope Cruz.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Pretty much the same.
My favorite.
We're almost twins.
She's my number one. And then.
So I am your number one.
And then Alba. Jessica Alba.
Yeah, she
is. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there's a lot of
pretty
out
even,
there.
That is not even fair.
Yeah, but she's probably not that great on the radio.
Yeah,
I'm probably better.
You probably are.
Yeah.
All right, so we're listening to The Mysterious Traveler, the man from Singapore from 1950. Let's get back to it right now.
Blanche.
Yes?
It's almost 6 o'clock. His plane was supposed to have arrived at 4. Shouldn't we call the police now?
Certainly not. It's much too soon to become alarmed. Tomorrow morning at 11 or so, when Bates hasn't arrived, you'll call the airlines and make inquiries. The following day, we'll go to the police.
All right, just as you say.
Oh, relax, Horace. I'll do the thinking.
Yes, Blanche. It's 6 o'clock. What about supper and some drinks at the club?
Oh, fine. We can stand a little relaxation. I'll get ready and... Someone came into the office.
The staff have all gone. Perhaps one of them came back. I'll see.
Can I help you?
Yes. Yes, maybe you can. My name is Garrett, Fred Garrett.
Well, come into my office, Mr. Garrett.
Thank you.
Now, what can I do for you? I said, what can I do for you?
I don't like people who stare.
Sorry. Haven't we met before?
No. I always remember people with bad manners.
You still haven't stated your business, Mr. Garrett?
I'm looking for Mr. Bates, John Bates. Mr. Bates?
We expect Mr. Bates in the office tomorrow morning.
Oh. Well, then you've seen him, spoken to him?
Why, no, not yet. His plane only arrived 2 hours ago.
Oh. Well, the plane arrived, but... Mr. Bates didn't.
He didn't?
You must be mistaken. We have a letter here from him that says
He wasn't on that plane. I know.
How do you know?
I boarded that plane in Singapore with Bates. Sat beside him all the way to Hawaii. Got to know quite a bit about him after a while.
Well, Mr. Garrett, if you say he didn't arrive this afternoon, then I suppose he didn't. Possibly he decided to spend a few days in Hawaii.
You're wrong again.
Wrong?
Yes, because he told me he was in a hurry to get to San Francisco. In fact, we had tickets on the same plane, adjacent seats.
I see. What do you make of it?
Well, this I do know. I left Bates in the air terminal in Hawaii to buy some cigarettes. When I turned to look for him, I caught sight of him going out the door with a woman.
You're staring again, Mr. Garrett.
Yes. You know something?
What?
The woman I saw Bates leave with, she looked like you.
Well, that's preposterous. Why, Miss Werby spent the weekend at her lodge in the mountains.
You don't say.
We do say.
I hope it stands up.
What do you mean?
Let's skip the preliminaries. I'm betting that if the police found out what I know, it would give them an entirely different slant on the whole disappearance. That weekend in the mountains wouldn't stand up.
Blanche, if he...
Shut up! How much?
Swanky office you have here.
How much?
You know, on that plane trip, I managed to get quite a bit of information out of Bates. Told me he hadn't seen the States in 25 years. Alone in the world. No relatives.
What are you getting at?
The office force expects to see John Bates here tomorrow morning. Right? Well, they're going to.
Well, what are you talking about?
What's the matter, Mr. Riker? Don't you recognize your partner, John Bates?
No, that's a price we won't pay.
Oh, now, let's not be too hasty. Look at it this way. If I'm John Bates, then John Bates can't be missing. Which means there'll be no need to notify the police, start an investigation which may end, well, who knows where. From the looks of this business, I'm sure there's enough for three.
No.
I'm afraid I can't take that as an answer. Tomorrow morning at exactly 9:30 a.m., I'm going to walk into the reception room of this company. The rest will be up to you.
Good morning, Horace. Good to see you again.
Good morning, John. Welcome home.
When did you arrive?
Yesterday afternoon on the 4 o'clock plane. Well, so this is our San Francisco office.
Yes, to think you've never seen it before. Oh, John, this is our office manager, Miss Werby. Blanche, this is Mr. Bates.
How do you do, Mr. Bates?
Well, so you're Miss Werby. Horace has written so much about you.
This way to your office, John.
Oh, thank you, Horace. Hey, it's good to be back in San Francisco after all these years. It's hard to believe I've been gone 25 years.
Here we are. I hope you like the way it's decorated.
Yes, yes. Very nice. Very nice indeed. I'm glad to see that you two decided to act sensibly. It shows excellent judgment.
I think we'd better have a clear understanding about everything right now.
Of course. Now, as far as the business is concerned, I have no wish to interfere with the way it's being run. I'm sure that I can trust you two, and that the books will be in perfect order.
There's more to it than that. I want to know just what...
Come now, Miss Werby. Let's not go into details when I've been home less than 24 hours. We'll discuss it another time. Horace, would you have the cashier make out a check to me for
$5,000? $5,000?
Yes. Yes, I'm going to spend the day looking for an apartment, buying a car, acquiring all the necessities that a man in my position must have. Now, hurry it up, will you, Horace?
Blanche, why don't you stop pacing the floor and sit down? Have a drink.
In 2 weeks, he's taken $17,000.
Well, it isn't as though the business couldn't afford it.
Oh, you fool. Where do you think it'll all end? He'll milk the business dry.
Well, perhaps if you were to have a talk with him, point out...
It'll take more than a talk. Oh, to have gotten rid of Bates and then have had this happen. Well, he isn't going to get away with it.
Now, Blanche, there's no
use... The second Mr. Bates is going to join the first.
No. No.
You think I'm going to let him blackmail me out of everything?
Blanche, no. We were lucky the first time. This time, something's bound to go wrong.
No, Horace. I'll take care of everything.
Yes, Blanche, you've known it would have to be this way since the day that Fred Garrett walked into the office, haven't you? In the 2 weeks that have passed, you've already formulated a plan. Your coldness towards Garrett gives way to warmness. Soon he's spending more and more time in your office. Then one day, you invite him up to your mountain lodge for a weekend. He arrives on a Friday evening, pleased to find that he's your only guest.
Ah, dinner was wonderful, Blanche. So was the liquor, the place. Most of all, you.
Thank you. You're the perfect guest, Fred. Easy to please.
Not Fred, Blanche. John. John Bates.
Yes, of course. I keep forgetting.
You shouldn't. John Bates is a much safer name than Fred Garrett. In more ways than one.
Another drink?
Sure, why not? You having one, too?
Of course.
Right. You and I are going to get along, Blanche. Gonna get along.
Fred? Fred. That's it. Fall asleep, Fred. Horace?
Yes, Blanche. Is he out?
He's dead to the world.
I thought he'd never pass out. It's almost 1 a.m.
The late hour makes it all the better. The road will be empty. Pick him up, Horace, and carry him out to the car while I get his suitcase.
Yes, Blanche. He's real heavy. Hard to manage.
He won't be for long, Horace. Not for long. Hold Mr. Garrett steady, Horace. He's leaning on me.
Yes, Blanche.
We're almost there. Did you park my car where I told you to?
Yes. It's hidden just off the road.
Good. Well, we haven't passed a car yet. The mountains are really deserted at this hour.
But what if one comes along?
It isn't likely. But if one does, we'll see the headlights long before it reaches us. Here we are. Now, help me get him over here behind the wheel.
That's what I'm doing. There.
Good. Now, get out and come around here.
Is he still unconscious?
Yes. Look up and down the road. Is there a car coming either way?
No, Blanche.
And stand aside while I release the brake and close the door. There. Now, Horace, one push. There it's going.
Look how fast it's picking up speed on the downgrade.
It'll go off the road at the curve. There.
It's going through the guardrail.
There it goes over the cliff. That's what comes of drunken driving.
Come on, Blanche. Your car is parked up the road behind those trees.
Oh, no. We're going down the side of that mountain to make sure he's dead.
But he must be. That was a 100-foot fall.
Maybe he is. But we're going down to make certain.
But, Blanche, it'll take
us... No buts. I've got to be sure. There's the car. Near the stream.
It's completely demolished. He couldn't have lived through that.
He'd better not have.
Look, Blanche. There he is, lying near the car. He was thrown out by the crash.
Yes. See if there's any heartbeat.
No, Blanche. I don't want to touch
him. All right, I'll do it myself.
Is he dead?
I can't find any heartbeat. And yet I'm not certain.
He must be dead. No one could survive that fall.
Maybe not. But we'll play it safe.
What are you going to do?
Horace, help me drag him the few feet to the edge of that stream. We'll leave him by the edge of the stream, face down in the water.
Blanche, must we? I'm sure...
Take one of his arms. Now, pull him along slowly. That's it. As if he'd crawled to the stream for water. There. His face is in the water. We'll wait a few minutes, and then we'll leave. What did I tell you, Horace? It's worked out perfectly.
Come in.
Miss Werby's here, sir.
Sure in, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
I had to come in, Miss Werby.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Well, that'll be all, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Now, have a seat, Miss Werby.
Thank you. I can't tell you how shocked I was, Lieutenant, when you phoned and told me that John Bates had been killed in an automobile accident. How did it happen?
Well, suppose first you tell me when you last saw Mr. Bates.
Why, Friday night. He arrived at my mountain lodge at about 8 o'clock as a weekend guest.
Mm-hmm.
He told me that something unexpected had come up and he'd have to return to the city that same night.
Well, then what happened?
Well, we had supper and he started drinking very heavily. At 1 a.m., he started to leave.
I see.
I tried to persuade him to stay overnight, that he was in no condition to drive, but he wouldn't listen.
And that was the last you saw of him?
Yes. How was he killed?
Well, his car plunged through a guardrail. Fell 100 feet down the side of a mountain.
Oh, I never should have let him drive off in that condition.
That looks like an open and shut case. Except for one thing.
Yes?
An autopsy was performed on Bates. Seems his neck was broken. He was killed instantly.
Oh, I see.
But there's one little thing.
What do you mean?
What we want to know is how could a dead man drag himself 6 feet to the edge of a stream?
Why, I don't understand.
Well, fortunately, we do. See, Miss Werby, we've been questioning Horace Riker for the past 3 hours. He's finally confessed to everything.
No.
He claims it was your idea from beginning to end.
No, that isn't so. I had nothing to do with
it. Riker claims you forced him into it. He's made a full confession. Looks as though you're it, Miss Werby.
No. It was he who planned it all. You must believe me, Lieutenant. You must. He threatened to kill me if I didn't do as he told me.
I see. Riker, in here.
Blanche, well, they've been questioning me for hours. Questions, endless questions. I've told them we don't know anything about Mr. Bates' death. I told them.
Then you didn't confess.
No, Miss Ruby, he didn't. We haven't been able to break him. But your confession will do.
You tricked me. You tricked me.
Yeah, but I wasn't the only one who tricked you. So did Fred Garrett.
Fred Garrett? You know that he isn't John Bates?
Yeah, we found out this morning he isn't. Garrett blackmailed you, didn't he? You were forced to accept him as John Bates because he knew you'd kill the real John Bates.
Yes, he blackmailed us.
He was bluffing you all the way.
Bluffing? But he threatened to go to the police.
Police? He'd hardly have done that.
Why not?
Fred Garrett was a fugitive.
A fugitive?
He was wanted by the Singapore police. For murder.
You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, which is played by Maurice Tarplett. In the cast were Grace Coffin, John Gibson, and Louis Van Ruten. Original music is composed and played by Al Knopf. This is Bob Emmerich speaking. All characters in our story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That's The Mysterious Traveler from April 4th, 1950, with The Man from Singapore, starring Maurice Tarplin as the title character, is heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. So we had a bunch of mail here. Like, I don't know how people forget our address here, but they do, and they find us, and we eventually get a mail.
They know that we're in the Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
So there you go. 435 North Michigan Avenue. But honestly, the best way, if you can, is to text in the text-in line or a Facebook. But if you can't do that,
yeah,
we still have a chance to read everything,
it's
and we
nice.
Do appreciate
it. Snail mail.
I know.
It still exists. People they put still, stamps on things. Like there's a little birdie stamp right there.
And they
look
actually
at this stamp.
Write them.
This one is from the Wisconsin prison system. We have a listener in the prison system listening to the show, wants to hear Dragnet.
I think we have a bunch
That's
of
good.
Them,
that
actually.
Means they're being rehabilitated. They want to hear Dragnet.
That's right.
That's good.
That's
I like
it.
That. And then, let me see. There is one person sent in a bunch of jokes. So I have a joke. I have a joke for you, Lisa.
Yes, well, I read them. So do it.
No, this is one you didn't read.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this woman, and speaking of prison system, this is a little bit about that.
All right.
This woman steals a can of peaches, okay? And so she's in the courtroom, and the judge says, ma'am, why did you steal a can of peaches? And she said, I was hungry. And he said, well, all right, how many peaches were in that can? And she said, 5. And he says, okay, well, then I'm gonna sentence you to 1 month for every peach. So you're going to serve 5 months. And her husband was in the courtroom, and he says, Your Honor, excuse me, but she also stole a very large can of peas.
Well, as long as it came from the husband.
David, what'd you think of that? Did you like that one? Is David up there?
He sure is.
No comment.
No, thank you.
I thought that was a great joke this listener sent in. That was good.
We don't like to egg him on, right, David?
Yeah. I'm staying out of this. This is the two of you. You have fun with that. I'm leaving it alone.
David's like, listen, I'm preparing for the news here. Leave me alone, right?
He's smart enough.
I know. So in just a minute, we will have the news. But when we come back at midnight, it will be Sunday. See, I'm getting
it
that
gets
all.
Confusing.
I'm figuring
I
this
know,
all out. That's
I
only
know.
Taken 2.5 years, but right. I've got it figured out. At midnight, it becomes Sunday, right?
Right.
And when we're here on Sunday,
we have three new
at
radio
midnight,
shows.
It becomes Monday.
Isn't that something?
It's crazy.
I
we're
know.
On Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
And I feel like we
Not
were
sure
just here like 2 days
possible.
Ago. So I don't know how the whole week went by.
But Fred Allen is the special guest on Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy and the Charlie McCarthy Show on our next program. That's in hour two. Then hour three, we have Under Arrest, a good police action drama with Joe DeSantis. Tomorrow we have more classic radio, Lisa.
We sure do.
You know what? We got a good lineup. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
Good job,
You're
Lisa.
You're going to tell me?
Gunsmoke.
Right.
I love Gunsmoke.
A lot of people ask
Your
for that.
Dad likes Gunsmoke.
He does.
Mr. Matanky.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Philo Vance Detective with Jackson Beck.
Right.
And then Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis with their special guest, Marlena Dietrich.
See? Perfect. We
think of
Perfection.
That. You're going to have some great shows tomorrow to present, Lisa.
I know it. And what are you going to
be
doing?
Can I be here with you?
Sure.
All right. Thank you.
I'll let you get me
that.
Some coffee or some water.
I will.
Or something.
Whatever you want.
Okay.
All right. So, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. That's our time slot every Saturday and Sunday. And we just love this. We love playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Our text in line, 312-981-7200. We also have a website, WGNRadioTheater.com, and we have our full schedule up, I think, through the end of the year is up there.
I think it is.
Wow. Good job.
I just have to mention one thing before we go to news really quickly. I sure am.
Yeah.
We just got the cutest text ever.
Yeah.
It's
a picture of you as a baby.
Exactly.
Little
no,
baby
no, it's
picture.
Me right now.
Oh.
No, no. We got Matthew from San Diego, California, and his dog who listens every
Lisa
Saturday.
Loves dogs.
And this is the cutest little boy and the cutest dog ever.
Yeah.
So I'll show you in the screen
right.
in a second.
Okay,
so
good.
Thank you so much for listening.
We love getting texts from our listeners.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, we're back. Hour two. Thanks, David. And this is the WGN Radio Theater. We're here till 2 a.m. And then we'll be back here tomorrow, or actually tonight at 11 p.m. Huh?
It gets confusing.
11 p.m. We'll be
Saturday
here again with three more hours of classic radio. Hey, folks, I want to remind you that we have a website that we've set up just for you, and this website is to thank you for being a listener. And if you sign up, it's absolutely free. If you sign up at this website, you will receive an email every Monday from me. And in that email, so 52 emails a year, every Monday you'll get an email with an embedded classic radio show, the full show, a 30-minute show, uncut. It has all the original commercials in it. And then there's a picture of whoever is in that show, if it's Humphrey Bogart or whoever it may be. And there's a synopsis. There's what else is in there? The original broadcast date, who the sponsor is.
There you go.
Right, Lisa?
You don't need me. Just keep talking.
What was it last week? Do you remember?
No, I knew you were going to ask me that,
gosh,
too.
I forget because I do them way in advance.
Yeah.
But they come every single Monday around sometime in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then you can Bluetooth it to your car and listen to it or on any listening device or on your computer, whatever. And you can collect 52 shows every single year. You just keep them in your email box, right?
Right.
And it's no cost. It's just a way of us saying thank you for listening to the WGN Radio Theater. Now, what's the website? Just log on. You can do it right now. You can do it anytime you want. But do it before Monday because you'll get the Monday email if you haven't. Just go to freeradioclassics.com. Free Radio Classics. There's an S on the end there. Freeradioclassics.com. Right, Lisa?
Right.
I want to make sure I'm doing this right.
Yeah, I have nothing to say. You got it all.
Really?
Yeah.
For once, you have nothing to say?
You don't need me for anything. You've got it down.
I need you. I need you, Lisa.
I need you.
Stella.
Yeah, just go to freeradioclassics.com. Check that out. All right. In this hour, it's the Charlie McCarthy Show with special guest Fred Allen. Then in hour three, it's Under Arrest, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV show Purity about a woman who begins a global journey in search of her father. Mm. And the winner gets a Lou Malnati's
wow.
gift certificate for $25.
Yummy.
That sounds perfect.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This is this actor starred in Skyfall.
Bond. James Bond.
Who is that? Who is that actor, Lisa? We all know who he is.
We sure do.
312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll find our winner after these words.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Bond. James Bond.
Bond. Shaken, not stirred.
Oh, you sound exactly like him, right?
I know. I look a little bit like him, too.
Let's talk to Carrie. Hey, how are you?
Hey, morning, guys. Very good.
Good
Hi,
morning.
Carrie.
Who is that actor that Carl sounds exactly like? I know.
Well, Carl sounds more like Sean Connery, but I believe that.
Thank you.
Craig.
I appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, I think you are absolutely right. On both counts, you are right. It's Daniel Craig, and you are a winner. You have won the wonderful, delicious Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25. You've got yourself one delicious pizza on the way, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. Thanks so much for calling in. You are definitely a winner.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Take
Thanks,
care.
Carrie. Hey, speaking of James Bond, Lisa.
Yeah.
I just watched a documentary on Hulu.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've got all the latest. I have all the latest channels.
Do you pay for it?
I don't know.
Do you subscribe to it?
Yeah, I have it on my...
You don't know if you subscribe to it or not?
I get Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and all those on my TV. I don't know. I guess I pay for it. Somebody, you're not paying for it, so I guess I'm paying for it.
Well, there's certain free ones.
I can send my bill over to you.
Can you fast forward through the commercials?
Yes.
Then you're paying for it.
Okay.
Okay.
I can do that. No, I just saw a documentary on Hulu that is absolutely tremendous. It's called Becoming Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Becoming Bond. My friend Bo told me about it, and he's like, you got to see this. So I watched it. And there was, you know, Sean Connery was the first James
sure,
Bond.
Yep.
And then a few movies in, he didn't want to do it anymore. And so he would not sign up for the next film, which was On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Do you know the reason why he chose not to do it?
No.
Again? There was more to that story.
He ended up later playing Bond again. But, you know, everybody knew James Bond as Sean Connery, right?
Sure.
So now they're doing this nationwide search for a new guy. And they cast an actor. Well, actually, he was not an actor. He was a model. He was a male model. He had never done anything in film. His name, George Lazenby. Some people may say Lazenby. George Lazenby. Well, he actually is on this documentary, and it's all about how he became
Bond.
George
yeah.
Becoming Bond.
He was Bond.
And it is fascinating, absolutely fascinating, because he was an Australian. He wasn't even English. And he followed a girl to England that he fell in love with in Australia. And before you know it, he becomes James Bond. And I'm not going to ruin anything for you because I don't want to tell you how it ends. But it's absolutely fascinating. It's on Hulu.
Is it a one-time thing?
It's a one-time thing. But Jane Seymour is in it. Jeff Garlin is in it. I mean, it's a well-done documentary. And George Lazenby narrates it. You know, they're asking him questions, and then they dramatize, you know, the stories that he's telling. And it's amazing to me that this actually happened, what they show in this documentary. You know, I'm a Bond nut. Love James
Bond.
Well,
you're a nut, but...
Yeah. And then he only did one film. Just one.
Yeah,
that was it.
Right.
And then Sean Connery came back and played the role. And then, of course, Roger Moore. And then, you know, Timothy Dalton and all the rest. Daniel Craig now. You got to check it out.
Great,
thank you. Pierce Brosnan, of course.
Brosnan, yeah.
Yeah, love Pierce Brosnan. He's great.
Brosnan.
Brosnan. What did I say? Brosnan? What did I say?
You're just one letter off. You're so close.
You know, here's the thing. If I'm one or two letters off, you shouldn't even bring it up. Because
right. That's
it is. It's a mulligan.
No, you just have a name
thing.
It's
a mulligan.
And I know you know. It's just you have a name blockage. Yeah,
I have a lot of blockage, actually.
Do you really?
Yeah.
It's too much information.
You don't need to know about it. But,
that's going to make the inappropriate reel right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's time for Charlie McCarthy. I don't really have to tell you much about it, right?
No,
you know
don't.
All about Charlie.
I sure do.
Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. Edgar Bergen was the ventriloquist and Charlie McCarthy was the dummy. I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's a 50-50 thing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Could be that or the
other. He had two other dummies. Did you know that?
Mortimer
Snerd. And what was the other one?
Oh.
It was a girl.
Yeah, I know.
Effie something.
Yeah.
Effie Clinker.
Yeah. Oh, Clinker.
Yeah, Effie Clinker. You know, he married the model, Edgar Bergen, not Charlie McCarthy. Edgar Bergen, in 1941, married fashion model Frances Westerman. And 1 year later, Candy Bergen was born.
Yeah.
Good old Candace Bergen.
Yeah, yeah.
She's great.
Yes, she is.
All right. And you know what else is great? The Charlie McCarthy Show and their special guest, Fred Allen. Let's go back to November 2nd, 1947. Here's part one of the Charlie McCarthy Show.
The makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee and Royal Puddings bring you the Charlie McCarthy Show. This is Nelson Case, ladies and gentlemen, greeting you from Radio City, New York, on behalf of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Ray Noble and his orchestra, Anita Gordon, Mortimer Snerd, Pat Patrick as Ursel Twing, Matt Crowley, and our special guest, Fred Allen. And here are Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Thank you, you lovely Gothamites, you.
Ah, there's no place like New York in the fall.
No, there is, no. I love the way the big wind blows in from the United Nations.
Yes. Charlie, what have you been doing since you've been in town here?
Well, I've been walking in Central Park all day with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
Walking the floor all night with my two.
Oh, I see.
Yes. I got to give up one or the other.
Yeah. Well, that's rather tough luck, isn't it, having a toothache at this time?
Yeah.
Does it hurt?
I don't know. I really don't know. The pain is so bad, I can't tell.
Is it? Well, your face is certainly swollen.
Yeah, inflation hit me. Yeah. Everybody thinks I'm two-faced.
Is that so?
The one with the monocle is my head.
Yes, I know. Well, it's a messy thing, an impacted tooth.
Yeah. Are you sure that's what it is?
Yes. The dentist showed me the X-ray.
Oh, I say, did someone call me?
No, Ray, no. No, I was just talking about Charlie's X-ray picture.
That lad is in more pictures.
Yeah.
I just saw him in Fan Fun and Fancy Free.
Well, you didn't do that much good.
No. No.
Now playing at the Globe Theater. All right.
Yeah. Yes, I was talking about Charlie's tooth. You see, it's been aching.
Oh, Charlie, does it hurt all the time?
No. Only by appointment, Ray. See, the nerve is exposed, you know.
Oh, well, why don't you tuck it back in?
No, you don't.
Charlie, I knew a chap once who had a wisdom tooth pulled. And it left him a perfect idiot.
Did it hurt you much, Ray?
No. No, Charlie, no, it wasn't me. You see, it was my cousin's tooth, once removed. It...
Yeah, well, I don't get
But
it.
After that, my cousin wasn't afraid of a dentist.
Oh, fearless?
No, toothless.
Oh.
Really, sometimes I just kill me.
Yeah.
I really do.
You keep promising to do that, but you never do. Well, maybe my toothache will go away.
No, Charlie, the dentist said the tooth will have to come out, and he's going to give you gas.
He is? Gas?
Yes.
Well, that's dangerous, isn't it?
Oh, no, come on, Charles. Cheer up, old boy. No matter what happens, you've had a full life.
Yes. You're so consoling, Ray.
Thanks awfully, yes. I've composed a nice exit march.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll be glad to play it at, shall we say, the proper time.
Yeah, Ray, now, aren't you overdoing it a little bit?
Yeah, you're always exaggerating.
Well,
that's...
perhaps so, but after all, I'm only human.
Well, there you go, exaggerating again.
All right. Well, Charlie, if you're going to take that attitude, I will. But when you get into that dentist chair, my boy, remember, chin up.
Yeah. Gee, taking gas? You never know what might happen while you're unconscious. You know, Bergen?
Yes, Charlie.
I've never made a will.
You haven't?
Yeah.
Well, is there anything I can do?
Yeah. Would you take this down?
Yes, of course.
I, Charlie McCarthy, being of sound mind...
Yes?
Otherwise in a heck of a mess. Scratch that.
Yeah.
Do hereby bequeath my telephone book of numbers to Skinny Dugan, my pal.
Your pal?
The louse.
Scratch the louse. Yes, oh, yeah.
And to you, Bertie, I leave all the money you owe me.
Well, thank you, yeah.
Also, my pet rat.
What would I do with a pet rat?
Well, maybe you could teach him to talk.
Yeah. I shall see that all your possessions are disposed of.
Well, only if I die.
Only if you die.
Don't go out of your way.
No, I won't. I didn't mean it that way, Charlie, because if anything should happen to you, why, I don't know what I would do.
No?
No, I just hate to think about it.
Is the thought of work really that unpleasant to you?
No. Oh, Charlie, it's just that you mean so much to me.
Gee, Bergen, I guess I've been a little stinker, haven't I? But I want you to know, deep down inside, I really like you.
Yes, I believe you do have a soft spot in your heart for me.
Oh, sure. It's all mush in a yard wide.
Yeah.
Bergen.
Yes, Charlie.
Kiss me.
Yeah, all right. Is that you under that blindfold?
Ew. Well, you got me.
Yeah.
With this thing on, I can't see who I am.
No, I imagine not. Well, can't you see anything at all under that blindfold?
Well, on a clear day, I can see the blindfold.
You can?
Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, why are you wearing a blindfold anyway?
Well, I gotta. You see, we was playing a game Halloweeny night, you know.
Yeah.
And where was that?
Halloween night.
Oh, yeah, Halloween, yeah. And I can't see what I'm saying blind by now. And they told me not to take it off, you see.
Not to take it off?
That'd be cheating.
I see.
Yeah.
Do you mean to say you've been wearing it ever since Halloween?
Yeah. Oh. Long time no see.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take it off right now. There.
Well, thank you, yeah.
Yeah. There. Now tell me, who gave this party, this Halloween party?
Well, it was some friends of mine.
Friends of yours?
Yeah.
Friends?
Yeah. They're people.
Yeah, I know. Of course they're people.
Oh, you know them too.
No, I don't say that. You,
You've been getting lots of invitations lately, haven't you? Mm. You're quite a gadabout. I say you're quite a gadabout.
What about?
Gadabout.
Oh, gadabout. I don't know what you're gadabout.
Yeah, well, that means someone who gets around.
Oh, yeah. Around who?
Oh, around socially.
Oh, him.
Yeah. No doubt this party was a masquerade. Did you wear a funny face?
Yeah, this one.
This one, I see.
I don't have much choice.
No, I see. Well, I suppose you played a lot of games.
Yeah, it was the gamiest crowd I was ever in. Yeah.
Did you bob for apples in a tub of water?
Yeah, we had fun doing that. We were supposed to catch the apples amongst our teeth.
Yeah, that's right. That's not too easy.
Well, it was for me after I drunk all the water out of the tub.
Games did you participate in?
Well, they made me bend over and imitate a canoe.
Uh-huh.
Only trouble was they did the paddling.
Oh, I see. Did it sting?
Oh, it stung like 60.
Yeah. Well, you didn't mind a little thing like that.
No. In a few days, I'll be sitting pretty again.
Yeah.
In another game, I fell down the basement stairs.
Yeah. Where'd you hurt?
No, I didn't get hurt. Concrete floor broke in the fall.
Oh, I see. Well, didn't you play more pleasant games like post office?
Yeah, I don't like that game. They kept saying I had a letter in the next room.
Yeah.
Turned out to be nothing but some girl.
I see. Well, what did the girl say?
Well, they said I was a dead letter.
They did. Yeah. Mortimer, you're supposed to kiss the girl.
No.
Yes. Most boys your age like to kiss girls.
Well, maybe I will too when I get to be my age.
Yeah, maybe. Mortimer, I just can't believe that you're as stupid as you are.
Can't you?
No.
Well, force yourself.
All right.
Anita Gordon singing about that naughty Angeline.
Too many rings on your finger, naughty Angeline. You laugh at romance that lingers, naughty Angeline. You take a heart, then you break it just for fun. Someday you'll break one too many. Yours may be the one. Everyone kisses a flower filled with sweet perfume. Nobody kisses a flower when it's lost its bloom. So find someone's arms, mischief-making baby. Settle down while there's time. 'Cause deep in your heart, you're a good little girl. Naughty Angeline. Naughty Angeline. Naughty Angeline. You take a heart, then you break it just for fun. Someday you'll break just one too many. Yours may be the one. Everyone kisses a flower filled with sweet perfume. Nobody kisses a flower when it's lost in bloom. So find someone's arms, you little mischief-making baby. Settle down while there's time. 'Cause deep in your heart, you're a good little girl.
Not so very naughty Angeline.
That is the first portion of the Charlie McCarthy Show. That was Anita Gordon singing there. What if her last name was Pat on the Back? I need a pat on the back.
Well, I could do that for you, Carl. I could give you a physical pat on the back, or I could just emotionally, you know, give you that kind of pat on the back.
You're too far away to physically, so just emotionally do it. All right. You're way over there.
What a great guy you are, Carl.
I don't want you to hurt yourself.
There's your pat on the back.
November 2nd, 1947, special guest Fred Allen coming up in just a few minutes. But first, let's take a quick break on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. It is 12:30 in the morning. Hey, look who's up there.
Where?
Hey.
Look at that. Look at the man in the...
You just were missing us, weren't you?
The man behind the curtain.
So we're glad you're back.
I'm the man in the box.
Hey, tomorrow, you know what?
Tonight.
Oh, I should say tonight.
Tonight. We've got a big night, Roger.
Yeah, I know. Did you see I updated it about an hour or so ago?
No.
Yeah, I updated my countdown list.
Okay, well, don't update it
much. No. I'm going to leave some.
Let's tell our listeners what we're talking about.
All right.
So you want to do it, Roger?
Go ahead. Yeah, well, we're picking our favorite songs from a specific year. You guys have already done 1969 and 1970.
Right.
And this weekend, we're doing our favorite songs of 1971. So if people can guess yours, Lisa's, Carl's, mine, and Esmeralda's.
you got to add an extra person. There's
you
just four.
The invisible man.
Yours, mine, Lisa's, Carl's, and Roger's.
I want to make sure we got the names down because it's not like the four of us have agreed on one song. There's four different songs, even though possibly two or more of us may have selected the same song, but that we don't know that because I don't know yours, you don't know mine.
Well, I know Carl's and he knows mine. So far, so good.
Roger, I'll show you mine if you like.
I'm staying out of that one. Roger, and the thing to note that people ask is you don't have to get them all right. You only need to get one of ours right. But you do have to specify whose song goes with what person.
Exactly. You can't just guess the song. And you have to guess the title and the artist or just the title?
No, just the title.
Okay, all right.
And you know what, Roger? Yeah. If you would send yours to me and email it or message it to me prior to the show, that way Shantae could have it ready
to go.
I think what you should do, Roger, is have,
you know that whatever... you know what the Academy Awards, they have like a special, you know, what is it like?
I don't know what you're trying to say.
There's like an auditing firm or something.
Oh, yeah, Price Waterhouse, our accounting firm.
Don't just send it to us. Use Price Waterhouse
and then get
it to us.
I'll send you the bill for them, too. I've got to be honest with you. I don't know mine yet.
Oh, boy.
All right.
See,
well,
on my Facebook page, I listed about a week ago the top 100 songs of 1971, and I have been deleting songs, trying to get down to my top song. Now, a couple hours ago, I just deleted some more.
Are you deleting them off your Facebook or just in your mind?
No, on the Facebook page. I list songs, and then I said, all right, delete these numbers. And then the next day...
Yeah, but that's telling people what the...
That's okay. Because I still have a list of about 20 that I don't know which is which.
You're not following the rules.
No,
that's not the rule.
That wasn't
the rule. Roger doesn't know how to play in the sandbox. He doesn't play well with other boys and girls in the sandbox.
Here's the thing.
Listen, we have a particular sandbox.
We have rules.
You're not fitting in the sandbox.
That you're not adhering to, Roger. So get with the program. Here's the thing. So with us, it could be... anything maybe out of those top 100. We haven't whittled it down for anybody.
No, I understand.
But you whittling it down to 20 gives them a different chance than they have to get ours right.
It's a 1 in 20 chance that they can get
it right. Ours is 1 in like 100.
Over 100.
All right.
You got to play well with others.
We'll leave it at whatever it is.
We're good. We're good.
You guys are just beating me up
here. I had no idea Roger didn't know how to play in the sandbox.
We're going to teach you.
I brought a bucket for everyone.
That'll work.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Lisa, hand me your pail and your shovel for the sandbox.
Well, he didn't actually give
me
one.
Don't let Roger play with those.
I didn't get one from him.
And no, give me your beach ball. He doesn't.
Well, maybe Bessie, if you explain the rules.
He doesn't get to play with any of that stuff.
You're not being nice.
You didn't explain all the rules to me before I started doing that.
See?
You just said pick a song.
It's true.
Oh, boy. So it's my fault.
Yeah, it's all Carl's fault.
And now who's kicked out of the sandbox?
Yeah. I want to play.
I'm just going to play by myself. I feel like playing by myself now.
Oh, man. All right, so we're going to have a little chat,
yeah.
Mr. Baddish.
Okay.
We'll have to chat about this.
That sounds like he's going to the principal's office.
Like I haven't been there before.
Listen, when's the last time you've been called into the principal's office?
I have a memorial chair, please.
He's got a giant dunce cap. He has that still from high school.
You got that right. Why
have
do you, think
you been
my
called
pointed?
Into the principal's office,
I used to
Carl?
Have to
I get a call every day, please.
Did you really?
On. Huh?
Like back when?
Yeah, like since grade school.
I remember being put in the corner. I remember that.
Oh,
well,
I
did that in junior
myself.
High.
I used to, my nose is kind of shaped like that now because of
a
so many
corner.
Times.
It's a right angle.
I was put in the corner.
You had to face the corner?
Yeah, it's like.
You never heard of that?
Sort of permanently.
No, I've heard of it.
Your
but
nose in the
I
corner.
I never had that.
At Washington High School. I mean, Washington Grammar School in Schiller Park,
mm-hmm.
I used to have to go to the corner a lot.
What did you do to be put in the corner?
I was a rowdy kid, I guess. I don't know.
Shocker.
Yeah. Sure. You know what I used to...
Kicking people out of sandboxes.
Isn't he difficult?
They'd be like...
We did it too, but we didn't stand. You know what we had to do?
What?
Squat.
Oh, even worse.
Good for the muscles,
one kid was
though.
Left there Gosh. For about 30 minutes. Couldn't stand man. Back up.
Yeah, that would not work
today. He has emotional
today.
Problems
no.
now.
No, mom would call yeah, in and that would be the end of it.
Oh, that'd be it.
Yeah.
And if we were chewing gum in class?
Yeah.
All right, so the boys, because we used to have to wear shirts. I mean,
you
not
had to
t-shirts.
Wear shirts?
Well, no, I mean, shirts with pockets
oh, like
and collars.
Nice shirt.
And oh, yeah, we got dressed up for school. So the boys had to take the gum and stick it in their shirt pocket and smash it.
Oh.
And then the girls had to put it at their hairline.
Oh, God.
That's
yeah.
just
that's cruel.
Just mean.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And that was a public
spirited.
School.
That's cruel.
Yeah.
I'm going to complain.
All right. Do you have any gum?
That's
I'm
what
coming
moms
up
do.
There.
Yeah, right. No, I'm not chewing gum anymore.
See, that they taught you well.
It worked, see?
All right. It's time for the conclusion now, and as we'll go up and talk to Roger. It's yeah. time for the conclusion to the Charlie McCarthy Show.
Times have changed since the fairy godmother went around granting wishes. Some of her duties have fallen on me. So, what do you wish for?
Royal puddings. Rich, rich, rich with flavor. Smooth, smooth, smooth as silk. More, more, more food energy than sweet, fresh milk.
Royal.
More, more, more food energy than sweet, fresh milk.
Yes, more, more, more food energy than sweet, fresh milk. That's the simple story of Royal puddings. Mothers know the magic in milk. It's rich in proteins, vitamins, minerals, food energy. And Royal puddings give even more. Yes, even more food energy than the sweet, fresh milk you make them with. Give your children lots of milk and lots of Royal puddings. Children must have food energy for the running and jumping that helps develop better bodies. A big, delicious serving of Royal costs just a few cents. So buy, try Royal puddings. Rich, delicious chocolate, smooth, creamy vanilla, mellow golden butterscotch.
Royal puddings. Rich, rich, rich with flavor. Smooth, smooth, smooth as silk. More, more, more food energy than sweet, fresh milk.
No, I've changed my mind. No, my tooth doesn't hurt anymore.
Now, Charlie.
No, Bergen.
Now, you stay right in this chair and let the dentist examine you.
Don't worry, young man. I'll spare no pain.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of, yeah.
Now, nurse, will you prepare the anesthetic?
Yes, doctor.
No, no, please. No, I'm too young to die.
Oh. You're not going to die.
Oh, of course not. Your chances are 1,000 to 1.
Yeah. Which end of those odds am I on?
Now, open your mouth.
Hey, Doc, why do you put that little mirror in my mouth?
When you breathe on it, I can tell you're still alive.
What? Yeah. Oh, no, no.
Start the gas, nurse.
Oh, no, nurse. Nurse, could I have a little kiss just to give me courage?
I'm sorry. We don't give stimulants before an operation.
Oh, gee.
But in this case, I might make an exception. Here.
Nurse, now will you hold my hand so I can relax?
I'll hold both your hands, then I can relax.
Yeah. You know, I feel kind of dizzy.
Oh, there again. Bergen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't go away.
No.
I don't go away, Bergen.
No, I'm right here, Charlie.
Well, my old pal, Bergie. Bergie, if I should happen to, slip away.
Yes, Charlie.
As soon as I get my wings, I'll come down and see you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. That's very nice of you. You're pretty sure you're going up that way?
Yeah. Well, you don't think they'd send me down? Oh, no, not little old clean living me. What have I ever done?
Well, now, how about the time you put a skunk in the school ventilator?
Yeah, well...
And how about the... No, please, let's not go into all that.
Now, just relax.
Yeah. I see a horrible vision up there on the wall.
Well, that's a picture, Charlie.
What? Yes, that's one of our patients, Fred Allen.
Oh. Isn't it enough I have a toothache? Do I have to have an upset stomach besides?
Do you want me to turn Fred Allen's picture to the wall?
Put it under the wallpaper. I want to go out with a smile on my face. You know,
this is it.
Oh, it's getting dark. Hold my hand, Bergie.
Yeah.
Hold my hand.
Now, young man.
Yeah.
Start counting backwards from 8.
8, 7, 6, 5, Madison, Park. So smoky. Ooh, and so hot. Hello.
Hello.
Who are you?
Oh,
it's just an echo. My name's Charlie.
My name's Joe.
That's all. Well, where in heck am I?
You're in heck.
Well, what's happened? I don't understand. Where do I go from here?
You better go and register. And take off that coat. You won't be needing it.
No, sir. Register where?
Just follow that red line into that cave.
Yes, sir. I can't still believe it. Little old me, no. I must have gotten on the wrong subway.
Greetings and conflagration.
How do you do? Is this the induction center?
Yes.
Say, aren't you Fred Allen?
Yes.
Oh, this really is heck. Well, Fred, how did you get down so low?
Well, I was going along minding my own business, and the new Hooper rating came out.
I hardly recognize you in the red underwear. And Fred... You've got horns.
Yes, Charlie, but I prefer to call them antlers and to think of myself as a bloodshot deer.
Well, it's the old story of an old buck with fawny ideas.
Expected that to go bigger.
Yeah.
Why, Fred, you've even got a pointed tail. And it's so long, too.
Well, everyone's wearing them longer this season, Charlie. It's the new look.
Oh, can you swat flies with it?
No, but I have a lot of fun wagging my tail when I'm happy.
Does it get in the way?
Well, only when I back out of a phone booth.
Have you ever tried wearing your tail in a snood?
No, but on formal occasions, I starch it and wear it over my left arm.
Why don't you wrap it around you like the man on a telephone book? Tell me, Fred, are you the head?
Well, I don't know. Shall we go ahead?
I would proceed with caution in view of the lines coming up.
Yes. What is the usual waiting time back east here? Tell me, Fred.
Well, it's a 3 hours difference from California. 11:30 tonight, the last will be rolling in.
I'll stay up for the returns, yes.
Are you head man down here?
No, Charlie, I'm just a vice president. There are millions of us down here.
How did you get the job?
Well, I have friends in Washington.
Oh. Well, you never know what's going to happen.
No?
Here we are, both gone to heck.
Oh, please, Charlie. We don't use that name here. No. We call it Little California on the sticks. Tell me, Charlie, how did my radio audience feel, you know, about my leaving?
Oh, they took it very nicely.
Really?
Yes. Gee, now me.
Gosh.
I don't know whether I can take it down here, this heat and smoke.
Well, it saves a lot of trouble, Charlie.
How?
From now on, nobody can tell you where to go. You're already here.
To me. Can you do a pal a favor?
Oh, I can't make any decisions, Charlie. You see, I'm just chairman of the investigating committee. I can't do anything definite, you know.
No.
You'll have to speak to my assistant. He's stepping out of the fire now.
Around.
Oh. Yeah.
I thought I'd never get out here. My name is Ursel Twing, and I am here.
You are?
Yes, I'm here. Just as big as life. And I am the custodian of the clinkers, and I'm also the boss's right-hand man. And, well, I'm not exactly a right-hand man either because I'm left-handed.
Well, tell me, what's cooking?
Well, down here we say, who's cooking?
Mr. Twing, this is one of our latest arrivals.
Oh?
Will you kindly get the junior pressure cooker ready?
Oh, goody, goody, brimstone. And friends, I'm also in charge of all the records.
Yeah. Well, soon you'll be out of the job. Have you heard about Petrillo?
Mr. Twing has compiled some very interesting statistics, Charlie. He can tell you how much chance a snowball has here.
Yeah. About as much as I have, I suppose.
That's right. I am also in charge of reservations for the incoming guests.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Say, what's the dope on Bergen? When's he coming down?
Bergen?
Yeah.
Oh, now, let's see. I'll get my little book here. Is it A.B. Bergen?
No. It's Edgar Bergen.
Oh, Edgar. Well, he's not coming down, it says here, because he's been very kind and generous.
Generous? You better have your audits redone there. You've been in the heat too long.
Yes, I know, but confidentially for you new guests, I have cold drinks such as lemonade, orangeade, and Adelaide.
Adelaide?
Yes, Adelaide is a lady colleague of mine.
Oh, see.
She's so sweet and oh, just, if you'll pardon the expression, heavenly.
Well, the ice cold lemonade sounds good.
Well, the only trouble is it's dehydrated.
Well, then just let me lick on a piece of that ice, will you?
All right, but it's dry ice.
Dry ice?
That's the heck of it.
Oh.
Well, I gotta go now. It's time for my etiquette classes.
Oh, you teach too, huh?
Do I teach?
Yeah, I asked you.
Do you want to know if I really teach?
Not necessarily.
Well, for goodness sakes, my gosh, I'm the instructor of fire eating. Goodbye, I.
Well, McCarthy, I can't waste any more time with you. I have to get ready for a big housewarming tonight.
Well, who's coming down?
Jack Benny. I'll have to throw another log on the fire.
Yeah. Well, now, don't look at me that way. You wouldn't do that to little old me, would you, Fred?
No, Charlie. You're much too young and tender. We'll frigazee you.
Well, you try that and I'll tie a knot in your tail, you rat, you.
No. Come here, you termite flophouse.
I'm going to get out of here.
Running won't help, McCarty. Where's my pitchfork? I'll get you in the end,
no,
Charlie.
Oh, hell, Bergen. Ow, Bergen.
It's all over now. The tooth is out.
Too? Oh, Bergen, it was all a dream, wasn't it?
Yes, Charlie. And look who dropped in to see you.
Well, if it isn't Charlie, my dear little bosom friend, Charlie.
Must you keep hounding me? Doc, give me another whiff of that gas.
The greatest coffee event in years is bringing cheers from thousands upon thousands. It's a newcomer from Chase and Sanborn, a great new flavor achievement.
This week, without fail, get the new Chase and Sanborn, which we are sure you'll agree is the richest, most flavorful coffee that money can buy. Make no mistake, the new blend is a sensation, the most satisfying coffee you ever tasted. More delicious because you get more shade-grown flavor, vacuum-packed at the top of its form. Don't delay. Don't miss out. No later than tomorrow, get the new, improved Chase and Sanborn. You'll revel in its wealth of shade-grown goodness, the extra flavor of finer coffees, slow-grown in tropical shade. What's more, you get that flavor at its best and freshest in the new Chase and Sanborn. Every pound is vacuum-packed at its flavor peak, fresh from roasting. No other container in the world can give you such delicious flavor in such lavish abundance. Take advantage of that. Try Chase and Sanborn today. We're sure you'll agree that this is the richest, most delicious, most satisfying coffee that money can buy. Ask your grocer for Chase and Sanborn coffee now. Be sure and listen in next Sunday to Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Ray Noble, Anita Gordon, Pat Patrick, and their special guests, Maurice Evans and Lulu McConnell. Nelson Case speaking to you from Radio City, New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That is the Charlie McCarthy Show, starring Edgar Bergen, along with Charlie McCarthy, Ray Noble and his orchestra, Mortimer Snerd, and special guest Fred Allen, sponsored by Chase and Sanborn Coffee and Royal Pudding, from November 2nd, 1947, heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, on our Facebook page, when you go there, please like us. But there is a picture of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy up, right?
Yes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Along with Maurice Tarplin. And then is the Joe DeSantis picture up yet?
Let me check.
He's the star of Under Arrest. That's in our next hour.
No, the last one we have posted is the Charlie McCarthy Show.
Okay, so it will be going up. All right, so check out our website at WGNRadioTheater.com and check out our Facebook page by just logging on the Facebook, searching WGN Radio Theater. Right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
All right. Did you want to mention a show that you saw? Did you say something like that? You saw a show this week and you wanted to mention it?
I did.
Oh,
see
you
a
saw
show
hair.
This week. I saw hair this
oh
week.
My gosh.
I, for a second, I
Long,
couldn't remember what I saw.
Beautiful hair.
Yeah. See,
was that guy as good as me though?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
good.
Of course not. But it was.
I was
a great
waiting
show.
For the call to sing that song.
No,
from...
you didn't get the call.
My phone wasn't working that
That's
well.
Probably.
This,
it.
I'm
yeah.
sure they were trying to get.
Maybe
through.
They left a voicemail and just you didn't get.
I've been
it.
Having phone issues.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah. How was it?
It was a great show. It was at the Mercury Theater, which is on Southport.
Good stuff there.
It's going to be running for a while. So if you love the show, and you know that show,
you better
has
catch
a,
it if it's going to be running.
It. That show has a big cult following.
Yeah,
it just does.
Yeah. Did they do the Age of Aquarius?
Well, you can't do hair
that?
Without doing the songs.
I did my hair. Look, I got a cut.
I did too.
Which one?
Yeah.
Which hair did he get cut? Hair's a great show.
I had my ears lowered.
Yeah.
And Lisa got a haircut, too.
I did. I got my haircut today.
Wow.
Wow.
Nice. Wow,
it's
Lisa.
A big day, right?
When she cuts her hair, her dimples even look bigger.
Oh, really? Yeah.
See how the dimples are.
Can you see that through
I
the camera, Roger?
I can see them. They're punching right through the video screen.
They're huge.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we all got to stand
but
out.
But you know what she does? She uses wild root cream oil, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Sam Spade detective.
Oh, that was Brill Cream.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's right. So she uses wild root cream oil on her hair.
Right.
And then she just uses it as spackle right in her
the spackle?
Right in she
I
uses
think it makes me shine.
Nice and greasy.
Yeah.
I think it makes me shiny.
It makes you greasy. There's
wait
nothing
a minute.
Wrong.
I think shiny is the correct
it's
word.
Very shiny. Hold on a second. I have to okay.
Now, there you go. Looks
better.
Got the hat.
I got the sunglasses.
Goggles on there.
Yeah, right.
am I shining?
So, Roger, you know what?
You're very bright. I've got a solution, by the way, for our problem.
Okay,
for
good.
For a song
good.
Problem. So, because I didn't quite understand it, and this is my first time, we could do like an extra bonus. Somebody guesses, I'll send them a nice greeting on Facebook.
Well, we figured it out here, too.
We got it. Right. We got you covered,
Roger. So what we're going to do tomorrow when we do the songs.
Tonight.
Later tonight.
It will be just the first person that gets yours right, mine right, Lisa's right, and Esmeralda's right.
The first one.
We'll get a Twilight Zone CD, even though it's going to be a lot easier to guess your song.
Not
because
really.
You have only 20 up there,
well,
and
actually,
we have over 100.
Well, actually, I sent Lisa my final list.
Through Price Waterhouse?
Through Price Waterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to have to look at it, and if she can guess, then, well, she gets my undying love and affection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but, I thought I had that anyways, but
yeah, well,
okay.
Even more so.
There's no such thing.
But if she can guess it, then I'm in big trouble.
Well, all I can tell you is when you figure it all out, Roger, and you got things together, send me your final answer so I can send it along.
You send me a note back because you've I send me a note back, see if you can guess it.
All right.
And then I'll verify one way or the other.
So,
okay.
Just to be clear, folks, tonight when we come back here at 11 p.m., we are going to hold a little contest throughout the show. If you guess Esmeralda's favorite song from 1971, Lisa's, mine, or Roger's, any of those, and you're the first one that texts in with a correct song identified to the person, you'll win a Twilight Zone CD set.
And remember, this is 1971.
Yeah, so brush up on it a little bit.
Brush
some good
up.
Songs in 1971. I don't think anybody's going to get my song.
Really?
Nope. I don't think anybody's going to get my song.
All right.
Just giving you a hint.
All right. Well, that's not very much of a hint.
Yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
We know what your song is, Roger. We figured it out already.
You didn't figure
it
out.
I messaged you.
Yeah, we
check.
Figured it out.
You didn't.
It's obvious.
Did you send me back?
Yeah, I did. And the interesting thing is Carl and I picked the exact same song from your list completely separately.
We both.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. To me, it's very Captain Obvious.
Captain Obvious.
It's very Captain Obvious.
Well, we both
guess
we both
what?
Said the same one.
Guess what?
What?
We're wrong.
We're right. Well, you probably just switched it last minute.
No.
That's how he plays.
No,
I think that's what
that's
it is.
That's how he plays in the sandbox. He plays dirty.
That's right.
Dirty
he just switched
sandbox.
It last minute.
No, yeah. I did not.
I don't believe you.
You know what? I had the list I sent you. I had emboldened the one that I wanted to choose, but I took it off because I wanted you to try to guess. It was not what you guessed.
Okay.
Trust me.
We do trust you.
Yeah, we do trust you.
Yeah.
Even though that list I sent
slightly.
You, great songs, could have been any of them.
It could be one of ours, too.
Yeah, it could be.
It was not the one, huh?
Yeah, it was not the one.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Well, looking forward to figuring it out. I know.
This is exciting.
I thought I saw a putty cat, too. All right. In this hour, we are going to tune into Under Arrest, a good detective police drama. And it's brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV show Mall Brats, a sequel to the 1995 comedy Mall Rats.
Got it? Yeah, got it.
All right. And the winner...
It's like similar, but not
it's,
the same.
You know, it's just a letter off, kind of like you.
Right. Oh, I'm off. All right.
Oh, just a letter. So the winner is going to get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Great.
Yep.
All right. Here's a hint. Well, the number to call, 312-981-7200. And here's a hint. This actress played Brenda in 90210.
Well, the way I see it is someone doesn't like me because I'm from Beverly Hills. That's their loss.
Yeah, it's their loss, Lisa.
Whatever
just
because
they're from Beverly Hills, you should like them.
I think so.
312-981-7200. Who is that actress? We'll find our winner after these words.
All right, we're back. This is a WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it one more time.
Well, the way I see it is someone doesn't like me because I'm from Beverly Hills. That's their loss.
Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Glad you called in. Who is that actress?
Shannon Doherty.
You are absolutely right, Jonathan. That means you're a winner, and you have won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set, which is the exact prize that people are going to be clamoring in to win tonight with our 1971 radio song contest. So congratulations. It is produced by Carl Amari, so you know it's got to be great.
Oh, thanks, Lisa.
Right?
Yeah. Jonathan, enjoy that. I think you'll like the 4 CD set we're going to send you.
Definitely. Thank you, guys.
All right, you're welcome, buddy. Thanks for listening in. And thanks for staying up late with us. Lisa was sleeping a little earlier. You should have
I generally
put my earplugs in.
Fall asleep while I'm talking.
She was out, man, like a light while that show was playing a little earlier.
What does that even mean, out like a light?
Yeah, you click a light, you turn it off.
Yeah, but the lights are on.
Yeah,
so.
You were out. You know you were
out. I think
out.
I was on.
She was sleeping away.
Yeah. I like to talk while
I sleep. A little drool.
That's you.
Yeah.
You're the one with the drooler and the mouth guard.
Okay.
Okay.
You say so.
That's what you tell me.
All right. Are you ready for this series?
Yeah,
Under
let's do
Arrest.
This.
It was a police procedural drama. And initially, Craig McDonald starred as police captain John Drake. But soon after, Joe DeSantis was recast, and he played Captain Jim Scott. So it was a little flip in the character there. And like Joe Friday, Scott dedicated his life to protecting citizens of his city. DeSantis was one of New York's busiest radio actors, appearing in Pepper Young's Family, Mr. District Attorney, Gangbusters, The March of Time, and many others. Under Arrest was broadcast from New York over Mutual from 1946 until 1949. I think we aired one of these before. It's a good show. I think you'll like it. Let's go back to a broadcast date of August 21st, 1949. It's called Ruth Cutler's Burglar. Here's Joe DeSantis in part one of Under Arrest.
Mutual presents Under Arrest, directed by Martin Mugner and starring Joe DeSantis as police captain Jim Scott.
Under Arrest.
Into yourself.
Criminals behind bars, under arrest. The story of police captain Jim Scott's fight against crime.
Who's there? How did you get in here?
Through the door.
What do you want?
I want to talk to you.
Get out.
I mean it. I only want to talk to you, and I get up out of your bed.
I warn you, I have a gun.
I don't want to harm you.
You've broken in here. Don't move.
Oh, you really do have a gun.
But no fear.
I think you're afraid.
No.
Why would a woman like you have a gun unless you were afraid?
I tell you, I'm not afraid.
That gun says you are. Now give it to me.
You're an intruder here. Get out. Please, get out.
No. Oh!
Operator, please connect me with police headquarters, will you?
Police headquarters, Captain Jim Scott speaking.
Captain Scott, did you say? This is Ruth Cutler.
Cutler.
Ritz Park Apartments.
Ritz Park.
Apartment 3D for Daniel or Delilah, if you prefer.
Delilah, definitely. What's your problem, Miss Cutler?
Captain, whoever comes, I do hope it's you.
Me? Why?
You have such a charming telephone voice.
I bet you say that to all the policemen.
I've never even spoken to a policeman before, Captain Scott. I've never killed a man before.
Killed a man?
I'm afraid. I'm terribly frightened. Please come, quickly.
I'll be right up. Ruth Cutler was our foremost professional authority on society. She wrote a newspaper column about various social events of the upper crust. She was a mighty handsome lady, tall, with big dark eyes and smoky hair worn like a Madonna. Say she was 33 and very calm-looking. However...
Captain Scott, it was horrible. Horrible.
Easy, Miss Cutler.
I woke up, he was coming toward me. He'd gotten in somehow.
How?
Through that door, I suppose.
From the kitchenette?
And the back door. I warned him, but he kept coming closer. Finally, I had to... His face twisted all up. His hands clawed at the air. And his eyes suddenly...
Easy.
Are you sure he's... I mean... What if he's still alive in there?
I looked.
Oh.
Ever see him before?
What?
Hanging around the building, casing the job, as it were.
Oh. No.
Think he came to burgle?
Obviously.
Why, obviously, Miss Cutler?
What other reason could he have had?
You're a prominent lady in our town. You mingle in society and could have enemies.
Social battles are fought with parties, Captain Scott.
Hmm.
By the way, Captain, just what do I face with the law?
If you kill a man in defense of yourself, of your home...
What do you mean,
if... It's not murder. But only manslaughter, and probably a suspended sentence. Just the same, I'll have to book you at headquarters as soon as my boys get here. Your attorney can easily arrange bail.
You know, I was right about you, Captain. You're every bit as charming and sympathetic as your telephone voice.
You think that fellow came in the back door?
Yes.
Then I wonder how his hat got here. On this little table in the foyer besides your front door.
Hat? Good heavens, I thought he came in the back door, but I'm so upset and confused that how could I have made such a mistake?
I don't know, Miss Cutler. Booking Ruth Cutler at headquarters for manslaughter didn't take long. She was out on bail inside an hour. I went down to the morgue to see about identifying the dead man. Unfortunately, he had no papers on him. We were beginning to prepare a police bulletin when I was called out to face a visitor. Small, very neat girl of about 25. Her eyes were icy with dread, and in one hand she clutched a copy of the early edition of the Morning Post News.
I want to see him, Captain Scott.
Who?
It's in the papers. The man Ruth Cutler shot.
The morgue's not a pleasant place.
Please.
Things like that are part of my job. In a minute, we were standing under the blazing light with a green glass shade, looking down at what was under it. I flipped back the sheet. You know him?
We came here yesterday from Boston for a visit.
We?
David and I. David Ashburn.
You're Mrs. Ashburn?
He runs a... He ran a small dress shop in Boston for 6 or 7 years. I work for him. We were very much in love. We were going to be married.
You don't have to stand right here, Miss...
Allison. Betty Allison.
Miss Allison, what made you think it was David Ashburn when you read about it in the paper?
David told me he happened to meet Ruth Cutler on a mountain road, and she promised to help him professionally.
On a mountain road, Miss Allison?
Only a few weeks ago. David was driving from Boston to somewhere in Pennsylvania. Her car had broken down, and he stopped to help. They got talking.
And you said she promised to help him professionally.
She's an authority on society, on good clothes for women. Huh? David was ambitious. He wanted to see her again.
And so you came along?
As his secretary.
You never suspected he might have inclinations to burglary?
He never did, Captain. I can't understand his being shot as an intruder. It's him.
Oh. Whoop! Hey, somebody, send a matron down here to take care of this girl. She's fainted.
Betty Allison's statement threw some new light on the intruder Ruth Cutler had shot. And only Ruth Cutler could focus that new light for me. But it was lunchtime the next day before I located her in one of the city's smartest restaurants, the Silver Pheasant, where they start by charging you a quarter for rolls and butter.
Oh, Captain Scott.
I'm sorry to interrupt this luncheon, Miss Cutler, but I need another little chat with you.
May I present Mr. Oliver?
Big Bill Oliver, isn't it?
So-called, Captain.
Well, it's a privilege to meet the next Commissioner of Parks and Buildings.
If I'm elected.
Oh, Bill, darling, you know you will be.
Ruth, I'd better wait out in the cocktail lounge while you and
Nonsense,
Captain Scott...
darling, not at all. I have no secrets from you. Captain, you don't mind if he stays?
I understand, Miss Cutler, that you did meet that intruder prior to last night.
What?
It was while you were driving through Pennsylvania. The date was the 7th of July, last month.
7th of July, I see.
Does that make you remember his name?
No.
David Ashburn, owner of a small but smart dress salon in Boston. Ring a bell yet?
It's quite impossible, Captain Scott.
That he ran a dress shop?
That I could have met him in Pennsylvania on the 7th of July.
Impossible?
Yes, I was some 400 miles from Pennsylvania. I don't suppose there were any witnesses to that meeting of myself and... whom did you say, David Ashburn?
No witnesses.
No, I should think not.
If you weren't in Pennsylvania that day, where were you?
Oh,
Must I answer that?
No, but I should think you'd want to convince me you never saw Ashburn before. It's one thing to kill a stranger. But if you knew David Ashburn before last night, then he might not have been an intruder, but an invited guest. And that's not manslaughter. That's murder.
Bill, darling, I'm afraid I'll have to tell the truth.
Well, of course.
Captain Scott, I spent the entire day of July 7th until 11 in the evening with Mr. Bill Oliver.
Oh.
We both took the day off, drove him to the country, had a picnic dinner, and drove back.
Well, that's quite different, isn't it?
Well, you can see, Scott, we're very fond of each other.
Okay, Miss Cutler, Mr. Oliver, thanks.
Goodbye, Mr. Scott.
I'll see you around, Scott.
I hope so. Goodbye.
Ruth, darling, that was quite a lie to tell you. You weren't with me that day.
Bill, dear, the truth is that I never met that David, you know, what's his name, or that day, or any other day.
Then...
Well, actually, that day, I was out at my own little country place, my cottage. But I'm afraid no one saw me there, and of course, I had to tell Scott I was with you, and that settled it. Now, darling, do get me another martini, and let's talk about something else. Another visitor. And with a gun.
You're rather late coming home, Miss Cutler.
I wasn't anxious to come here for purely personal reasons. Now let's talk about you.
My name's Betty Allison. I was going to marry David Ashburn.
How did you get into my apartment?
The handyman's usual price of admission to other people's apartments here is $5. But he doesn't like you, Miss Cutler. He charged me only $3.
I won't charge you anything to leave. Now...
I've come to kill you, Miss Cutler.
Oh, my poor dear girl. I'm all smashed up, really, over this tragedy last night. But I was only defending myself. I didn't know that you
Stop
even...
Stop it. What? Stop pretending. You and David were seeing each other in secret.
Seeing each other?
Yes, and he came here to break off with you, and you killed him. You lied to the police when you told them that he was a burglar, an intruder you never saw before.
But you're wrong. I didn't even know it.
Then how did David happen to have this?
Where did you find that?
One of his bags happened to be put in my hotel room by the bellhop.
Oh?
I opened it and struck gold, Miss Cutler. A solid gold cigarette case with the initials R for Ruth, C for Cutler.
You know, I'm sorry for what I'm going to have to say.
Another lie.
You loved him very much, I can tell. You looked up to him, admired him. Belief in him is perhaps the one thing that you have left. I'm sorry to have to destroy
You're
that.
You're forgetting my gun, Miss
This
Cutler.
Cigarette case, I paid $480 for it, was one installment of the blackmail that I was paying David.
Blackmail? What could David have blackmailed you about?
A little thing, but David was clever. He knew how to make a little thing loom large and black.
What a rotten, nasty lie. With David dead.
Betty, listen to me. Really, I feel horrible about this, but there's no reason for any of this to become known. David is a chapter in both our lives that we can both put behind us. It's easier for me, of course. I'm well-known, successful. I have a great deal to look forward to. And you... Will you let me help you?
You can't.
You worked with David in the shop, didn't you?
How do you know?
Just a guess. You'll want to continue the shop, and for that, of course, you'll need money.
Of course, but I can't...
Let me give you a check now.
A check?
For $5,000.
You rotten, contemptible... You think you can buy
no,
me?
No, I want to help you. I owe you that help. Please take it.
All right. If you put it that way.
My dear, I'm glad you're facing reality.
Yes. Every woman has a sharp eye for the real things in life. Maybe mine's sharper than even I thought.
You wait just a moment and I'll get you that check now.
That is the quintessential organ right there, Lisa. That is the mutual organ for Under Arrest. And I just love hearing, you know, it's like that. I could just see that person at the organ, you know, and just like...
Didn't we hear that on the first show we played tonight, too? We heard that
Yeah, the Mysterious Traveler was the
quintessential organ.
Yeah, because they were both on Mutual. Mutual used an organ. I don't think they... Well, Now that I think about it, there were some shows on Mutual that had a full orchestra. The Shadow was one of them. Probably the big shows had an orchestra, but most of these dramas on Mutual had an organ.
Well, I like it.
All right. Well, we're listening to Under Arrest with the Ruth Cutler burglar case starring Joe DeSantis from 1949. We'll get back to it in just a moment.
I want to mention very quickly, we did a little Facebook Live video, a little behind the scenes. I asked Carl a question, which was, what would he do if he wasn't here doing classic radio? And he had a really good answer. So if you're interested, check it out. It's on our Facebook page on WGN Radio Theater. Make sure to like us and
maybe
check
out. Maybe a minute tops?
Maybe about a minute tops,
Yeah, check it out. Go to Facebook. All right, great. It's news time almost, but first these words. You know what I saw, Lisa, this weekend? I saw Dunkirk.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You mentioned that.
I guarantee you, I am going to guarantee you it wins Best Picture.
Everybody's talking about it.
Guaranteed. Guaranteed. I saw it in IMAX, as Nick DiGilio said to see it.
Yeah, he did recommend that.
The only problem with the movie, and this is kind of a big problem, is I don't think I understood one word of dialogue in the entire movie, and I still
loved it. And you loved
it anyways? Loved it. Yeah, because they have very thick English and French accents.
Sometimes it takes time to adjust to them.
I needed subtitles to understand what they were saying. That's the only thing.
Well, that's a big thing.
No, but you know what? It's such a great movie, so visual and just amazing. And you kind of know the story. I mean, literally, though, there's like three stories going on at once. And you have to, at first you're a little confused, but then you figure out there's three different things and then they kind of converge.
Well, you're confused generally, so that would make sense.
It's I'm very easily confused. But this movie was, oh my gosh, was it fantastic.
Yeah, I've read so much about it.
Fantastic.
Everybody who sees it loves it.
So oh my gosh.
It has to be
Christopher
great.
Nolan.
Yeah.
You know, I got to meet him. I produced a movie years and years ago. Called Madison, and it was a premiere film at Sundance, and Christopher Nolan's movie Memento was also a film at Sundance that year, and so got to, you know, the producers got to hang, you know, and he was like a nobody. I'd never heard of him before.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like,
that's what he probably said about you.
Well, and I still am a nobody, but
no.
But he was, you know, here was Christopher Nolan, who knew what he was going to end up doing,
He probably said the same about you.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew Carl Amari is going to end up on WGN?
Great guy. But, man, he has produced some amazing movies. I mean, the Batman movies, of course, and what was that one with Leonardo DiCaprio? It was like real. Inception. He did Inception.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
And this movie is just incredible. You got to see it, Lisa.
Yeah.
Check it out.
All right.
I mean, it's a war movie. I don't know if you like war movies, but this is an amazing...
Well, if it wasn't on the stage of a theater, I would have already seen it.
An amazing war movie. Roger would love it. Roger, you saw it. Did you love it?
Yeah. We did not see it in IMAX. So that effect kind of was taken away. It took me, just as you mentioned, it took me a couple of minutes to realize that the stories were overlapping.
Yeah.
They weren't linear.
No.
They overlapped quite a bit, which was really great storytelling.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm as wowed as you are, but again, I didn't see it in IMAX.
Take your pail and your shovel.
Come on. This is a different sandbox.
Yeah.
But it was an excellent.
It's going to win Best Picture.
It was
Picture,
excellent storytelling.
Guaranteed.
Great acting. Unlike you, I did understand what
they
were saying.
You understood what
they
were saying?
Well, because Bridget and I watch a lot of British television shows.
I could not follow what they were saying.
We understood it. And Bridget and I both loved it. It was very good. I'd have to see the rest of the movies for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
See what comes out.
Okay, well, I'm making a prediction.
So far, though, it's your Best Picture.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right,
so check it out. Dunkirk, fantastic movie. All right, Lisa, hands up. You know why?
I'm under arrest.
You're under arrest.
Got it.
It's time now for the conclusion to Under Arrest.
Miss Allison!
Captain Scott!
What did she say to you, Miss Allison?
Captain, would you believe me if I said I'm very glad to see you? Look at this.
Huh?
Pay to Betty Allison $5,000. Ruth Cutler. She paid you this so you'd keep quiet about the fact that she knew David Ashburn before she shot him, right?
I was going to kill her, but when she offered me this, I knew she was scared, hiding something. I took the check to help you find out what.
Smart girl. Here's what's to be found out. What was Ruth's real connection with David Ashburn? And if he had something on her, why didn't she pay him off instead of killing him? I have no proof yet that this isn't manslaughter. But I'm sure of one thing. She didn't shoot a stranger in self-defense. She murdered a man she knew. Yes, Ruth Cutler had committed murder. But why? What was the connection between her and the dead David Ashburn? I put shadows on Ruth herself, on Betty Allison, and on Big Bill Oliver, who was Ruth Cutler's key man. That's how I knew that an hour or so later that same evening, Big Bill's smart gray and silver coupe carried him to the Ritz Park Apartments. I watched him go upstairs.
And the plain fact of the matter is, Ruth, if I want to be a success in politics...
And you do.
I've got to clean up my personal life.
And what does cleaning up your personal life mean?
The way the boss put it to me, this was some weeks ago, of course, he said, Commissioner of Parks and Buildings first. 2 years more, Congress from this district. After that, the Senate. And it's all in the bag.
The big boss still talking.
Yes. Yeah. It's all in the bag if there's nothing in my private life that the blue noses might object to.
Very well, Bill. Good night. And goodbye.
What?
Goodbye. You might wait until you get outside to laugh at me.
Ruth, darling, sweetheart. I'm not cutting off from you. I want to marry you. I want you to be Mrs. Bill, then Mrs. Commissioner, and finally, Mrs. Senator.
You're contradicting yourself, darling.
Me?
How can you clean up your life by marrying a woman facing a charge of manslaughter?
Oh, you're going to get off. Everybody we know is sorry for you, on your side.
Yes, still...
Besides, a man like me needs a woman like you. Charm, brains, quick wits... Beauty.
And a newspaper column in which to write about her prominent husband.
Oh, nonsense. You accept?
No.
What?
I'm only 33, Bill, and I'm still very attractive, even without a newspaper column.
Ruth, for heaven's sake.
I think you need me more than I need you.
What do you mean?
Bill, my hand.
I'm sorry. Didn't mean to hurt you. But what do you mean I need you more than you need me?
I simply mean that I haven't heard you say I love you.
I could kill any woman who bargains over feelings. I hope you're just kidding.
I have some pride.
We can take care of that right now. It'll prove how much I want you. You're going to marry me or I'll smash that alibi of yours.
Alibi?
You told Scott you were with me the day he said you met Ashburn on a road in Pennsylvania.
You wouldn't force me to marry you.
I want you as my wife. Is it a deal?
I dare say you and I were meant for each other. Very well, Senator. It's a deal.
That's a girl. Now let's have a drink to celebrate.
No, you go home. Anyway, get out of here. I'm driving out to my cottage for the rest of the night. I need some quiet and some time to think.
I saw Big Bill leave, grinning happily to himself. He drove off, followed by Lieutenant Larry Gavin. I was about to go upstairs to see Ruth Cutler when she came down, got into her car, and drove away. I tailed her all the way to her cottage about 15 miles out. I gave her a few minutes to put on the lights and open the windows, and then I went in.
I came here for a few quiet hours to myself, Captain Scott. Am I to be hounded this way?
Apparently, yes.
I need a drink. Will you join me?
Never when I'm working.
Well?
I'm working.
Well, work away. I'm going to drink alone.
What was David Ashburn blackmailing you about?
You forced that girl to tell you what I said, didn't you?
I asked the first question.
Well, not quite true that that man was blackmailing me.
But you did know him before.
No. Mind if I have my drink? I felt terrible over killing that man, Captain Scott. When that poor girl came, I felt I wanted to do something for her. But she hated me, even wanted to kill me. I knew she wouldn't accept a gift, but if I led her to think that she was getting something out of me...
You invented that blackmail story?
Yes, to get Betty Allison to accept my help.
Wow.
What?
Wow. I can't put it any other way. You expect me to believe that?
She took the check, didn't she?
Okay, here's another hot one for you to handle. How did this gold cigarette case of yours come to be in David Ashburn's possession?
Give it to me.
Easy, easy. The last time you saw it, Betty Allison had it in your apartment. But you let her walk out with it. You forgot it. That's a dangerous sign. Forgetting.
You know, you're making too much out of nothing, Captain.
How?
Well, David Ashburn must have been in my apartment once before last night and stolen this. Sure you won't have a drink?
Okay, Miss Cutler.
Good. Bourbon and...
plain water.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of my little place here, Captain?
Charming. Come here often?
Whenever I need a rest. Here's your drink.
Thanks.
I lead a very frazzled sort of life, Captain Scott. Parties, balls, social events of all sorts, contending with society people.
Then why do it?
Looking at me, Captain, would you think that I was born in a poverty-stricken family of 7 children in the slums of Chicago?
Were you?
Not quite, almost. And there's one thing I've always wanted. You might call it recognition.
As what?
A leader of society, maybe. Do you enjoy having power, Captain Scott?
I don't know. I don't have very much.
Power is the only thing worth having, Captain. It can bring you anything you want.
How you doing?
Honestly, not very well. Something always turns up, like this present tragedy in my life.
Speaking of things turning up, you'd better get yourself another alibi for that day you were supposed to have met David Ashburn on the road in Pennsylvania.
I don't understand.
That alibi is going to be very important when you face court, Miss Cutler.
You said get another alibi. What?
Yes, something always turns up. What turned up this time is murder.
Murder?
For about 2 years, Big Bill Oliver went around with a notorious girl named Honey Cashmore.
Oh.
Got so bad his political superiors told him to clean up his life. Honey Cashmore was murdered on July 7th. Yeah, the day you say you spat with him. And it's quite probable that...
that he killed her.
Coincidence. The day you need him as an alibi, he needs you.
What evidence is there against him?
It happened in the next county, and the police there tell me they may have a good case.
They may.
If the court breaks you down, that would finish Big Bill. And your own alibi would go at the same time. And on top of that, you'd face a charge of perjury. Things always do turn up. Don't they?
Obviously, Captain, I'll stick by Mr. Oliver. I've promised to marry him.
Well, I'll be on my way back to town. And here's my drink. You thought I'd stop working when I took it. Sorry. It's untouched.
Hello, Bill.
Yes, yes. Ruth, well, what is it?
You stay in your apartment. I'm driving in as fast as I can get there. I've got to see you.
I followed Ruth Cutler back to town. She drove straight to the building Big Bill Oliver lived in and went upstairs. She certainly had murder in her heart because Big Bill had trapped her on that alibi, but she was walking in on a man who was also capable of murder. I wanted Ruth Cutler alive. I was only 30 seconds behind her going up to Oliver's apartment. Oliver, I...
Captain Scott, I'm glad you...
What's the matter? What's wrong?
Come in and...
Shot. Dead.
Stop where you are, Captain Scott. Drop your gun.
I see. I'd better, Miss Cutler.
Get out of my way, Captain.
I'm not moving out of your way.
I'll kill you.
Like Ashburn and Bill Oliver?
This gun is power, and I'm not afraid to use it.
It's the only power you've got left, the only friend you've got left.
Everybody is against me.
You're sick, Ruth. Only sick people think everybody's against them. What you mean is you're against everybody.
Yes. Yes, I am.
And you're against truth. The truth is you were married 8 years ago to David Ashburn in those slums of Chicago you told me about. Later, you left him, and you told him you'd gotten a Mexican divorce. And when he found out that was a lie, he came to see you, and you killed him.
That's ridiculous. It isn't true, any of it.
Look, I've been in touch with the Chicago police.
All right, it is true. I was ashamed of him. Ashamed I ever married him. He was a dead weight on me, a dead weight like everything.
The real dead weight was lies, Ruth. You lied to Ashburn, then to me that he was a prowler.
Stop
then
that.
You lied that you were with Big Bill Oliver when you were not.
Stop it,
and
I
then
said...
the stories to Betty about blackmail, and to me about wanting
stop
to...
Stop it!
Always a spur of
stop
the moment.
Stop it! Stop you!
You can stop me, but not the truth. Truth wears seven faces, but you can't hide the truth. Give me that gun!
Everything! Everybody's always against me!
Not everybody, Ruth, just you. Because most of all, you lied to yourself. And now you got to answer for two deliberate murders. You're under arrest.
Captain Jim Scott will be back in just a moment to tell you about next week's case. Meantime, let me remind you that regular care packages are delivered to 12 European countries, including France, Great Britain, Poland, the western zones of Germany, Greece, Belgium, and the Netherlands. They also go to Japan, Korea, and the island of Okinawa. Care special 550 thrift food packages can be sent to any of these countries with the exception of Poland and Japan. Wherever your friend or relative lives in these areas, Care guarantees delivery and returns a signed receipt as proof. Endorsed by President Truman, Herbert Hoover, and General Eisenhower, Care operates to serve, not to profit. That's why you get top value when you order overseas food packages through Care New York. Either Care's 550 thrift package or a regular 22.5-pound, $10 package will be welcomed by your friends and relatives overseas who may still suffer from inadequate diets.
Captain Jim Scott speaking. Next week, I'm taking you on a roping, a term used to break a counterfeiting gang. I call it the case of queer money. You'll find it unusual, daring, and dangerous in my fight against crime.
You have just heard Under Arrest, presented by Mutual and starring Joe DeSantis as Police Captain Jim Scott. Today's case was especially dramatized for Under Arrest by Paul Milton. Original music was composed and played by Milton Kaye. Heard in today's cast were Joan Alexander, Joan Tompkins, and Louis Van Ruten. All names of persons used in Under Arrest are fictitious. Any resemblance to the names of actual persons, living or dead, is coincidental. This is Jack Farron speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Lisa, you are under arrest.
Ooh, that sounds fun. That
it sounds fun.
That I've never
it
had the
be.
Opportunity to.
You don't want to be
no,
arrested.
No, I was being,
I've never been arrested. I don't want to ever be arrested.
I was being facetious.
And that's August 21st, 1949, the Ruth Cutler burglar case starring Joe DeSantis. A good episode heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System. Who was the... who was the organist there? We got to figure out who the organist was on that program.
He
or she did a very fine job.
I bet Roger knows. He knows everything.
He does know everything.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.